When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards. I'm Matt Moderno. I'm joined today by Arison Demir. Arison, thank you for coming on here, man. I'm excited to talk NBA draft with you. We do one of these every year, so it's nice to keep the routine going here, and you're as knowledgeable on as many prospects of the draft as anybody I know, so I appreciate the time.
Matt, the man with the plan. Happy to be here again, man. Thanks for having me.
For anybody who is not familiar with your work, one, you're a great follow on Twitter, but you're also working this year in a much more detail on the eDemir NBA Substack. I would strongly encourage anybody to go check it out because you have these really great prospect profiles on a ton of guys. So anyone we talk about here today, you could probably find much more detail over the Substack. And if you're listening to this, the link to the Substack is in the episode description, so you can easily find it.
Yeah, appreciate it, though.
All right, before we get going, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas, Hard Lemonades. Brought to you by BetOnline as well. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, everything you can think of. Get the latest stats, news, and scores available for your favorite teams. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports, player props, odds on just about every sport you can think of. Head to the website or use your mobile device to join us today. BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, just want to plug, we will be doing a live draft show again on the Wednesday night of the draft. It'll be just the first round this year, so it won't be 5 hours of us talking, but it's just kind of a nice opportunity to kind of real-time live stream what's happening with the Wizards since they do have two first-round picks. We'll have some special guests throughout there, so make sure to check us out. Again, that's on June 26th during the NBA draft. And we'll be doing sort of a charity fundraiser again here. So similar to last year, you can just donate if you'd like to do that, or if you want us to plug something special on the show. Last year, we had over 10,000 listeners, so it's a good way to kind of get your company, your product, or whatever you want kind of out to the masses. So we'll plug anything anybody wants in return for a donation. And this year's charity is for the MS Society for Multiple Sclerosis. Our guy, Dave Johnson, that's one of the Wizards radio broadcasters, deals with MS and is a great ambassador for the community, kind of trying to get rid of that disease. And we want to raise some money to help him out as well. So anybody who's interested in that, let me know. I'll get you some more details. But yeah, thanks. So everybody who participated last year, I think, had a fun time with the draft show. So we wanted to run it back. This year, the Wizards more excited even than last year. You know, it was just the eighth pick turning into the seventh pick. This year, they have the second pick, the 26th pick, and the 51st pick. So we're going to talk specifically centers today. So guys, the big men that Wizards fans seem to want them to fill out the roster with. And at the number two pick, there's really only kind of two guys, I think, here that would even realistically be in consideration for them at number two. That's France's Alex Saar. He played in the Australian NBL this year, and UConn's Donovan Clingan. So, Harrison, just, I don't know, of those two guys, if you were the Wizards and both were on the board, which one would you go with?
It's a tough question, man. But the question I love to answer, you know, because it does depend on the type of basketball you're playing. I think with Saar, you're buying a defensive star. Mm-hmm. I think that will be his primary role. And on the offensive end, he has more potential than Clingan, but it might take some longer time to develop.
Sure.
And with Clingan, you know what you're getting. And with him, it's a utility player. So are you drafting that number two? But Clingan has very, you know, special gifts that make him a top five prospect, which we can dig in deeper later on. But as of now, if you ask me, I would go for Alex Saar between those two.
I'm with you. I think Saar is the guy that probably has the most versatility defensively. He covers the most ground. He's probably more switchable. Do you see Clingan as sort of a drop coverage center only, or do you think he can kind of hold up on the perimeter, at least for short stints if he has to?
Well, if you look at UConn's schemes, they are two big men. Mm-hmm. Clingan played drop coverage, and the other one went above screens, blitzing ball handlers, etc. And I think that's mainly giving him a reputation as a drop coverage big man.
Sure.
But I think with Clingan, despite him being so heavy, he has great mobility, man. I think his footwork is easily the best in the class in terms of big men. I think it's even the best if you compare last year's class as well. I think in the NBA, in a faster-paced NBA game with more switches, people will challenge him. But I think he's sliding his feet so well, man, because he has a very good last step. Mm-hmm. And helps it. He uses pivot foot very well. I think I see a European big man when I see him operate at UConn. I think what the thing that made him successful is his footwork and his mobility, despite being so heavy. And he alters shots at the rim. He deters shots at the rim. I think that's more valuable than being a rim protector. I don't really care about the block shots, but he is defending the rim like Chet Holmgren. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Like Chet did at Gonzaga. He's playing in the same way. And I think he played on a contender. I think that's the difference. And I think in the NBA, he's going to play in a similar way. But on the offensive end, the people that I spoke with all say the same thing, is that they are hesitant in how many points he's going to score. What does the team offensive rating look like with him on the floor?
Yep.
But his screening is another game changer for him. As a screener, he creates so much separation for ball handlers, especially in a pick and roll heavy NBA game. His screening will open up scoring opportunities for him without even having the need to put us shoot threes. I don't think he has to shoot threes to be successful in the NBA. But the million-dollar question is he worth the number two pick? Because he, at the end, he's still a utility player that you build your team around as a piece, but not as the number one or number two option. So I think that's the price you'll pay. Do you want elite big man build out other guys at two, or do you expect him to do more? I think that's an important question to ask.
I kind of always say I wouldn't take a big man in the top five or even top 10 unless I thought they were like a potential to be like a generational, you know, Joel Embiid type guy that you could get at that point. And I don't really see that for either of these guys, but Saar may just be the closest that you get here because of that sort of ground coverage he brings on the defensive end. If you buy into some of the creation and short roll passing and things like that, and even the shooting, I think it's a little bit of a knuckleball, but he seems to have like okay enough touch that he probably ends up a decent shooter, I would think. So if you buy all those things, I think you could at least talk yourself into why he makes a lot of sense. And then when you watch the NBA playoffs, you see what the Mavericks do when you put guys like him that are kind of elite, long, bouncy, mobile role guys next to ultimate sort of, you know, facilitator, creator combos in Luka Doncic and Kyrie to some extent as well. Like, he's a play finisher that would work really well next to someone like that. And the Wizards talked about it before last season, where they hoped that they could employ Daniel Gafford in that way next to someone like Jordan Poole. And Poole struggled a lot early, so we never really saw it materialize. But Gafford was at his best here in Washington when he played next to Russell Westbrook, somebody that gets elite rim pressure. I think that's really the way you best utilize someone like Saar, is to put him next to, you know, this elite rim pressure guard or wing even. And the Wizards don't really have that necessarily, unless Poole, you know, really steps up his game and becomes even better than the person we saw at the end of last season. So I still think that that's more offensive potential than Klingon has. I think Klingon actually seals pretty well around the basket, does some good drop step stuff, but he's mostly like a lob catcher, dunker at most, in my opinion. I don't see teams like posting him up. He's got like the high center of gravity. It's going to be a long time strength-wise, I think, before he really like can get leverage on bigger dudes. I guess, what's your ceiling for Klingon offensively? Like a 10-point per game kind of guy? Or do you see him being able to get up, you know, more than that potentially?
No, I think he can be a double-digit scorer, but okay, it will be like play finishing. Mm-hmm. I think the Lively example is a perfect one, because what Lively does well is he has Luka. I think, you know, the Washington doesn't have Luka, but yep, Luka finally has a big man who is capable to pass, defend, and roll. I think that's all he needed. And I think if Washington wants Klingon, they have to, you know, that's why I call them a utility play. You have mm-hmm. to have your pick and roll creators. Yeah. On your perimeter, but I don't think Washington has these guys. That's why I'm leaning towards Alex Saar.
Do you buy the shooting with Saar? Like, I think there's a little bit of knuckleball-iness there or something, but do you see the offensive potential, I think, that some people see?
I think I see it, because what's making it tougher, that's the nuance. Mm. When he was playing in Australia, he's playing in a faster-paced NBA style of game, but with sure. zero to no spacing. Mm. I think that's why he went there, because... When he started his career in France, he transferred to Real Madrid, mm-hmm. and he was too good for his peers among Real Madrid, and he wanted to learn the American game. In Europe, you don't learn that. So that's why he went to Overtime Elite and got introduced to it, you know. And why didn't we hear it at Overtime Elite? Because he was really getting accustomed to the American game. Mm-hmm. And I think the NBL was a perfect step after that, because he was used to playing in a faster-paced scheme in his own ways, in FIBA rules. Mm-hmm. So if you look at his numbers, I don't really value the shooting numbers, because yeah. it doesn't tell anything, because the NBA three-point line is different, the play rules are different. So when I look at this shot, I think it's projectable. But with Saar as well, I don't think he has to be a three-point shooter to succeed in the NBA.
Maybe not like strictly like a direct one-to-one comp, but what's the kind of role you envision him playing? Or is there a player in the league whose role you think is sort of similar? Like, you hear Jaren Jackson, or the ceiling is Evan Mobley, or these kind of guys. Like, I guess, how good a player do you think he could end up? Is this a fringe all-star kind of guy, a full all-star? Like, what's sort of the ceiling you see for someone like Saar?
I think it will depend on the amount of ball touch he's getting. But if I look at his game, I think he, for his size, his handles are okay. He has to develop these handles for sure. But I think growing up playing in these one-on-one type of, you know, how American players grow up, he grew up in a similar way. I think he will learn that at the NBA level. But I think the lack of spacing compared to where he's playing now, and he's going to the NBA with a lot more spacing, will open the game up for him. Yep. Because he has everything in terms of, he's not elite at one thing in offense, but he has a lot of things that he can learn, you know. I think when he went on to Podcast P, he talks about Giannis. Giannis took a couple of years to develop. Mm-hmm. I think I don't see any reason why he can't have such a development as him, not to be an all-time great, not to raise expectations, but Giannis slowly developed, and I think the NBA strength and conditioning program really yeah. unleashed him in Milwaukee. And that's another area where Alex Saar needs to work on his body, fill his frame, you know, absorb contact inside the arc. Because if I have one knock on his game, I don't like his touch around the rim. I think it's okay. average at best. And I think in the NBA, against stronger rim protectors, against average forward or big man, he's going to struggle in the beginning. So I think that's the most important area to work on, not his three-point shot, but to operate as a play finisher and to earn these on-ball reps. And that's why I like Washington a lot, because they play in a five-out, four-out offensive schemes. I think that's what they try to do. I think that's why they were okay with trading Gafford, because Gafford is not going to play in a similar way. I think that's why I like Saar to go to Washington. He will have the ball in his hands on the perimeter. I think that will open up his game. I think that's why I like the fit a lot, man, because he has to play in that four-out, five-out type of game. He doesn't have to be put in the paint, because I don't think he's effective there.
You always hear the, should they draft for need or best player available and all that stuff, and I don't really kind of buy into that thing a whole lot, but looking at potential fit with some of the other young upcoming pieces for the Wizards, one, you'd have a really good defensive potential, you know, with Koulibaly as your small forward and Saar as your sort of power forward slash center, depending on how you deploy him. He's probably maybe more power forward early in his career, and then when he bulks up, he can be a little bit more of a center. But I also just think he's a nice fit next to Tristan Vukcevic. Like, their skill sets, I think, would really complement each other well. They both pass it a little bit. You know, they both can put the ball on the floor a little bit. Vukcevic is more of the shooter. Sarr's probably the better, you know, defender. And I think they could kind of help each other out. So looking at that as like a front court of the future, I think is actually pretty exciting.
Yeah, I agree, man. If I look at the Wizards, I think about the Clippers, man. Wing heavy, ball handlers of the Koulibaly are too. Are going to have a great career. I think Vukcevic might have some, need some time, but he shows some good flashes. Mm-hmm. I think the Clippers is how I hope the Wizards will develop as well. Not so say guard heavy, but wing heavy. Okay. You know, wing heavy, ball handlers, multiple of them. But you need the big man as either a play finisher, or if you want a third, four out, five out type of offense, you don't have Zubac there, but that's where Alexander could really thrive as a ball handler. You know? And I think that's, you know, in picking second is actually a good thing. Because you're getting, hopefully you will get him, man. But if the Hawks picking, I will complain.
Yeah, I think if he's definitely on the board, he's the guy they're going to take. I can't see the Wizards front office passing up on Sarr if he's still there too. All right, I think we've covered that second pick pretty well here. So then the Wizards drop down toward the end of the first round here with the 26th pick that they get from the Clippers. And just there's sort of a pool of names in this area. If you go to the rookie scale consensus mock draft or consensus big board, I mean, it kind of starts with the next big man they have on their board at 17 with Kyle Filipowski. So let's just spend a minute or two on Filipowski's game. Comes from Duke, sophomore player. For anyone who hasn't seen his game, I guess, how would you describe Filipowski? And do you like his potential fit in Washington?
No, I don't, because I think he's a usage heavy forward, especially that college forward. Mm-hmm. You know, I think his footwork is very good. I think that's opened up his game at college. That's why he was so good. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to really give him the ball to let him succeed. I don't really see a good rotational piece in him. I don't really understand why he's in the lottery range, because I don't buy the NBA role at all. This may sound harsh, but I don't think he has any business going to the NBA in the play style that he played at Duke. Mm-hmm. If he's going to scale down his role, you know, you play more as a play finisher, I don't think he has a lot of value, because he was playing in a post-up heavy game. I think his connective passing is decent. I don't see him being better at any one of the other guys in his peers in this class. So I don't really like the fit for Filipowski, especially for the Wizards. I think if you have everything in place, you want to go for depth, you want to go for having multiple offensive varieties to score, for example, the Thunder or something. I think that's a team that could pick him, but the Wizards are rebuilding from zero, you know, so I don't think it's a good move to go for a guy like him.
The defensive concerns are bigger for me than the offensive concerns. I think he does have nice touch. I like the passing probably a little more than you do, it sounds like. I think he'll shoot it just fine enough for somebody his size, but he's kind of slow and plodding, and he came off some, like, the double hip surgery this year, so maybe he gets a little bouncier once he's kind of had a year to rebuild his strength up and stuff like that. I don't know, but he's basically a center size, but I don't trust him as much of a rim protector, and I don't see him being super switchable. So that would not be my preferred choice, even if he is still on the board at 26. I see a lot of mock drafts have him in the, you know, just after the lottery and stuff like that. I'm with you. That kind of surprises me a little bit. Someone taking him in the 20s, I think, makes a lot more sense. Yeah. To me, it doesn't make sense if you're Washington. Like, the best version of Vukcevic, I think, is a better version of what Filipowski could be. So why would you take another guy that is sort of that potential stretch big, I think?
Yeah, exactly.
The next one they have on the board here is Baylor's Eve Missy, sort of a long, bouncy, you know, rim runner, lob catcher, rim protector type. That's sort of how I view him. How do you feel about Missy and his potential fit?
I like him a lot, man. I think if you have your playmakers in set. Mm. Center is only the play finisher. I think he is the guy you should target at the end of the first round. Because his athletic tools, that's what you're buying with him. His size, he's young, he came from Europe. That's not that that's a value riser, but he played in certain philosophies, you know. Okay. And I think at Baylor, he went to the right school. That's really, you know, utilized him in his NBA role. Mm. I think if you're going for you know, a high floor, but investing in it, I think he's the type of guy you should select, you know, because I think in terms of his physical tools and medicine, that's what you're buying with him. Mm-hmm. But you really have to have a role in mind for him. And I think the Wizards are really in the rebuilding mode where they need more things. So I think you're limiting yourself in terms of, you know, possibilities at center if you pick him. But if you have a certain role in mind, I think he's a good player to draft. For example, I'm not going to use another team for example, but Orlando, for example. They have everything in place. If he goes there, be a rotational piece at center, I understand. But the Wizards, they need to develop a lot more things, you know. So to me, that's why he makes less sense.
Okay.
But I like his potential a lot, but I think you really have to have a role in mind for him where he can grow in.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Is like a Daniel Gafford, Clint Capella kind of role where you see him being like that kind of player?
I think Mitchell Robinson is way. I think Mitchell Robinson is the role that I think foresee for him, you know? Just as a play finisher, high energy guy.
Okay.
Who is building up his role, you know, in terms of, I think what Mitch doesn't have is his screening, but I think Avenis, he's underrated as a screener. I think that's what this value riser could be, but I don't see a lot of people talking about that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I had kind of thought about that either. The next guy we have on the list is a sophomore big from Indiana, Khalil Ware. Sort of super versatile, I'd say. Like, I think he does a lot of different things well, maybe more jack of all trades, less master of stuff than maybe some of these other guys where they have like an elite, this is my immediate thing I do. But Ware, to me, I think kind of makes the most sense for a team like Washington of those guys we've talked about so far, because the ceiling is higher to me, just given sort of the well-rounded skill set. There were some questions about maybe maturity and love for the game and stuff like that. I remember watching him a good amount in high school playing next to Nick Smith, and he'd be guarded by like a 6'6" unathletic dude and just be content to kind of coast. I think we saw him shake off more of those concerns this year, though, after kind of a rough, first college season. So where are you on Ware, and how do you kind of feel about his potential fit in Washington?
I love him, man. I think last year we were 50-50. People want Livy, people want him.
Sure.
And I think he went to Oregon, not a good school because they have a big man heavy rotation already. So he wasn't playing much. And in the summer, there was really a lot of, you know, criticism towards Motor. He wasn't capable to play long minutes. And that's why Oregon didn't play him much. I think the first year was really an eye-opener for him. He really had to invest in himself. But then Indiana came around the corner. So he goes to the Big Ten in a big role, in a two big my lineup. I think that's really helped him to, you know, focus on his role in the NBA. I think as a play finisher, he's very good. I think in terms of a screener, he should improve. But as you say, he has a lot of tools to work with. And I think Washington needs a prospect like him with a lot of tools to work with. The way he can bend them, shape him the way they want.
Sure.
I think he's young, or at least 20 years old. He's a 7-footer. I think in terms of his hip mobility, I think his hips are a bit, it's a bit rough. I think that's needed. He needs to work on that in terms of using his physical tools to his advantage, because you don't have to be the best athlete in the world. But what separates good big men from great big men is how they master their, you know, deficiencies. Mm-hmm. I think that's where Calabria should work on the most in terms of his NBA potential. But not everyone's learning curve is the same, you know. But I like him a lot, man. I think he's a lottery level talent in terms of what you're getting, because he can go multiple ways. That's why I didn't like Missy to Washington, because you have to have a specific role for him in mind. But Ware can grow in however role the Washington wants to play. I think the three-point shooting becomes more important with a big man like him, because he is not really going to have the ball in his hands too much. So he has to bank on the shots that he's getting in terms of the teams to keep his offensive rating in par, you know. So I think that's an area of development for him in shooting, but that's okay, because NBA teams are going to continue developing. You're not going to get an NBA-ready product from day one. But I think in terms of the guys that we covered so far, Khalil Ware is by far my favorite to pick later in the first round.
Yeah, 100% agree with everything there. And I think maybe the most important thing with Ware wasn't just the improvement from freshman year to sophomore year, but he showed much better production without having a real point guard. And I think that's hard to do, especially in college basketball. They had a weird front court heavy lineup, putting him next to Malik Renew and Mackenzie Mbako. And these are guys that just sort of don't all like fit together particularly well. And then they didn't have like a dynamic creator or anything like that to make life easy on these guys. So I think Ware really worked for like everything he got. So I think he's probably maybe even better at this point than we were able to see this year, just kind of given the fit. So I think he's somebody that people are sleeping on a little bit. And as long as he's like engaged and interviews well, and you feel good about all that kind of stuff, I think you hear sometimes team talk about like with big guys, like do they play because they're big or because they love it? You need to kind of figure out those things with someone like Ware. But as long as he does, as long as you feel good about that piece, like to me, he'd be a no-brainer at 26 if he's on the board.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
The next one here a little bit, and Jihadi and I talked to him a little bit about him a little bit last episode, is Purdue's Zach Edey. I'm of, like, you saw a lot of tweets like during their tournament run of like, oh, he's only good because he's big. And I don't buy that at all. I think he's got great touch. I think that somebody runs the floor as well as he does at that size as a 7'4" guy is incredible. I think the fact that he was kind of late to basketball and is already a 2-time national player of the year is amazing. I do worry about the fit a little bit. Again, at 26, if they say, hey, he's the best big man left for us, I wouldn't be mad at it. But if all these other guys, like if Ware's on the board, I would go Ware of the two. Where are you with Edey, and how would you feel about his potential fit in Washington?
Man, Edey is a lot of fun, man. Because last year, I remember people asking me, why don't you have Zach Edey on board? I was like, great question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because the production is 100%.
Insane. Yeah.
You can't blame that. And I think he's heavy footed, but he plays 40 minutes a night. So what are you going to say about that?
Exactly. Yeah.
He takes away everything that people threw at him for a couple of years. But I think the part that really is mind-boggling to me is that people are saying he can't play in the NBA. And then it's ESPN putting him in the lottery. And then all of a sudden he's an NBA prospect. So it doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah.
But I think in this year, he came back as National Player of the Year and he won it again. I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
The whole story, the whole Final Four run. But I think the nuance is their team was really set around him. Mm-hmm. They were the same last year, but he needs other players around him as well. And Purdue didn't really put good guys around him. They were decent. I think if you put their guards on another team, they're not going to play in the same way. They'll probably be less. But I think that's why NBA teams like him, because he's really a utility player. I don't think he's going to play 40 minutes despite him playing college 40 minutes and NBA phase 40 minutes, it will really take a team's pace down and really make a team's hard to maintain the offense ready, you know, because he, I don't think he really has to shoot threes, man, because he is dominant at the rim. You're buying rim dominance with him. Mm-hmm. People that are saying that he has to shoot threes, I stopped listening to. I don't really need their stuff anymore.
I don't see it either. When both he and Klingon showed like good shooting during the combine, people lost their shit. But I remember Mark Williams did the same thing, and he took two threes this year and made zero of them. So like I wouldn't just immediately assume because he hit wide open threes, he can. I mean, it's great that he shows he has enough touch to do it. I just wouldn't expect that from him. If you get that, that's an added bonus.
But I think what makes Sikki so good is he's hungry. When he sees a mismatch, he's going to punish you. I think that's how an NBA team should utilize him, man. Because, you know, switch early. Mm-hmm. The team switch him because he's really a good screener. You can't take that away from him, despite him being tall. I think if he was 6'10", he would still be a great screener. I think that's what NBA teams buy with him. That 1-2 punch, screen, switch, and punish inside the arc. But, you know, post-ups is not a really popular game anymore. So what's the team going to do? I think he's going to play 20 minutes max a night to really be effective. I think he can really be a double-digit scorer in the NBA. It wouldn't shock me if he goes top 20. But it's not really my cup of tea, man, that types of player. So that's why I'm really hesitant in, you know, putting him in my top 20 myself.
If there was a team later in the first round, like an OKC or somebody that just needed like a big body, you know, change of pace big, it would make a lot of sense to me there, like a playoff team that just needs a little extra bulk at some point. That's the team I think he fits for, of like you can afford to draft a guy whose ceiling is probably like a solid rotational big late in the first round. If you're the Wizards, I think you have to just swing for more upside than that. So again, I wouldn't like hate it if they were determined that he's, hey, we've got Bagley who's small, Holmes who's aging, and Vucevic, who's kind of more prim oriented, we're going to take Edie. Like, I wouldn't necessarily be mad. It just wouldn't be my choice. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm with you, though. I think it takes a very specific team to take him and kind of make the most out of it, too. There's kind of a drop here, maybe, in terms of where this consensus board has the next couple of bigs. But this is a guy I think we're probably both higher on, from what I remember, is Dayton's Daron Holmes. He's kind of projected like maybe early first round on a lot of these mock drafts. To me, at 26, he makes a lot of sense. And similar to Ware, I think I buy him as kind of maybe the guy with the best like two-way potential of some of the names we've talked about. Maybe a little undersized compared to the last couple guys, but runs the floor pretty hard, has good touch. I think he plays really good defense and will move his feet well enough to be switchable and stuff too. So that's my take on Daron Holmes from Dayton. Where are you?
Well, I want to go more in depth with Daron because I think he is very misunderstood, especially last year. Because I think what makes him a very good prospect, I think he can push all the way up to the lottery, is two things. I think his footwork. Yeah. Last year was the same thing. I think he has great footwork, man, because he really knows what he's doing. I think how he uses his pivot foot combined with his strength, I think he fixed his frame a bit more this year in being more effective on that end, is how an NBA big man operates, you know, because I think what really, you know, made him go back to school is that he didn't utilize his advantages in the post in terms of passing or popping out to the perimeter to shoot, you know, because I think the downside with him is he's not a real five. He's not really a four. He's a bit of a tweener. So you have to master a couple of more things to be effective. Because
he'd be a really great mobile small ball five for like a good playoff team or something, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And because he won't play full-time center. But the positive is I like him a lot as a pick and roll defender, where again the footwork is really standing out. I think his screening is, most college screens are just forcing a decision. You know, you're not really putting a wall that creates separation. I think with him, he does it better. Mm. But the downside is Dayton only played pick and roll offense, man. It was zero. Yeah, I didn't really like it. That's really
taking
away value.
They lost their
point
guard again for the second year in a row to injury. Yeah. I think that kind of held them back too. And the fact that Holmes was so crazy productive without, again, another like dynamic playmaker says a lot about him too.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the NBA, he will have less pressure to produce, make him flourish on the other side, you know, in terms of his passing. I think he invested in his passing a lot this year, man, especially connective passing. I think short roll playing in the NBA at that pace is the hardest thing to do. So that's not something I want to put on him. But as a connective passer in the post, utilizing his strength, I think playing in that post of type of game. But what I like with him is if he's going to score, he's going to score. If he doesn't go and score, he keeps the ball in the center for 1-2 seconds max. He's going to play it. I think in terms of ball movement, that's something that the Wizards are trying to do with Abdiel, with Koulibaly, with his wing-sized ball handler. He fits the best in terms of the future, what you should build around. I think even better than Ware. But I think the downside is you're not getting a real five with him. You know, you're getting a tweener, and how comfortable are you with that? Because you have to have another second big man on your roster. So I think that's more a roster construction question than fit in terms of Holmes. But I like Holmes a lot, man. I think he is one of the most misunderstood prospects in this class.
I could see people sleeping on him and him falling to like Boston at 30 and then just being like this really good, you know, first big off the bench playoff contributor for the next 10 years. And everybody being like, how did we miss on this guy?
So how did we allow them to go to Boston?
Exactly. Yeah. Why did we let them get better? I'm totally with you there. All right. So that's probably the guys I think that are like most realistic in that 26 range. There's kind of like a little tier drop down again, I think, for these next couple guys. So we'll hit them maybe a little on the quicker side here. The next one is Adembona out of UCLA. Got compared to Amari Stoudemire coming out of high school, going into UCLA, never quite materialized in that sort of player. How do you feel about Bona's game? And could you see him, I don't know, still being on the board potentially for the Wizards at 51? And if so, would you take him there if you were them?
I think the thing with Bona is I was familiar with the game because I followed a lot of, you know, I have Turkish roots myself. Sure. And he played for the Turkish national team.
Okay.
When he was 16, I followed him. But I liked him in terms of athlete, but the rest I never liked it because the first thing in Europe that you're learning is screening, but he was a terrible screener throughout his career. I think at UCLA it continued. Mm-hmm. He has a tend to make, you know, how Gafford played in the first couple of years. It was an offensive fouls, moving screens. I think in the first year that really hurt him at UCLA. In the second year, he took a bigger role. He improved.
Yeah, I think he got a lot better this year.
Yeah, because mostly these European guys, they get the feel for the game is how they get in. But with him, it's the other way around. He's really learning the game. I think in second year, he got a lot better. So I get to give him a lot of credit. But I think he measured at, 6'8"? I don't really care about the wingspan because, you're 6'8 against 7 foot. I think he's very good verticality. It makes up for it, but you have to count the things that make up for the lack of size. He's not a full-time five, in my opinion, but his game is built for five. So I think that's why teams are mostly going to consider him as an energy big, as a play finisher, as a hustler, because if you're going to look for someone who plays hard, you're not going to find more players than him too that plays hard, you know. But playing hard is okay, but what do you really have to offer? He's not shooting. He doesn't have to, but his screening, if that never materializes, I think he's going to get out the NBA very quickly. So I'm a bit lower than consensus on him. But if he's there at 51, which I think I would doubt that because I think in the early second round, the team doesn't need an energy because it's going to take him and trust that, okay, I can develop these athletic tools. But again, man, if he's there, definitely need to take him. But I think he's going to have a career as a, you know, you give him a specific role, nothing more, nothing less, and he's going to try. And that's okay as well, man. You don't have to have high ceilings with everyone.
Yeah, well said across the board. If it's just, hey, run the floor real hard, be super athletic, and catch a bunch of lobs, like, I think, you know, that's a guy who can do that. I think when you expect much more than that from him, I'd be, you know, a little questioning of that. And there are probably other guys that do similar things that might do them a little bit better. So I wouldn't be reaching for him at, you know, 26 or something like that. But like you said, if he's left on the board at 51 and you still haven't taken a big with either of your first two picks, I'm cool with trying that. Next guy on the board here is Marquette's Oso Iguodaro. Also kind of interesting to me. It's kind of a undersized. It's a little bit of like, I think his NBA role is like what the Grizzlies tried to do with like Brandon Clark a couple of years ago as like this switchable small ball five. Iguodaro moves the ball really well, doesn't really shoot it, isn't a crazy athlete, but he's just like kind of good at basketball and he's got decent touch, I think. So again, another guy that if he finds himself in the 51 range and they wanted to go with it, I wouldn't be mad at it. I think his value is probably greater for like a playoff team that needs an additional rotation big, though. The upside to me isn't as high with him as some of these other guys. How do you feel about Iguodala's game?
I think you have to play him as a four in the NBA. Okay. But you have to have rebounding at the five to really make him effective. I think what you're buying with him is a playmaking up. You know, ball movement, heavy teams.
Sure.
He's a very quick decision maker, man. He's a short old playmaker as well. I think if you're looking for passers, you're not going to find a lot more big men last year and this year than Osei Iguodala.
He thrives with the Golden State guys and stuff like that, I think, is like, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. I would like that fit for him, Golden State, for example. I think what gives him much more spice is his handles. I think he can self-create a little bit as well. It's not going to be asked a lot from him, but if you're not a shooter and you're not playing the five, you really have to make your own baskets at time to time to, you know, get your points up. But I think teams that have wing-heavy scorers, that they're trying to, you know, utilize the post more in terms of the playmaking from inside out, I think that's the type of guy you have to have. Again, a utility player. Yeah. I think that's why he wasn't declaring last year, because his game was not, you know, versatile enough.
Sure.
But he's really a specialist on that end. I think so teams with great rebounds at the five could get him on their bench. You know, for example, the Clippers. Put him next to Zubac at the four, for example, play with three wings on the perimeter, something like that. You know, ball move the playmaker. That's what you're buying with him. But I think the Wizards' rebuilding phase is too early to get these specific guys in the draft.
Yeah, I like him better than I probably just made it sound with my description of him. I just don't like the Washington fit a whole lot, particularly. Yeah. Another name that there's like a small segment of Wizards fans that are like just kind of really into this guy, and I have watched almost no minutes, so I need you to fully educate me here, is Ulrich Chamche. So can you kind of give folks that aren't in on his game like me kind of the sales pitch for him and what kind of prospect he is?
Oh, man, I wrote about him. I think it was January. I think if you have a couple of years, that's the guy you need.
Sure.
If you're not having a couple of years, don't take him, man. Because
it's, you think he's a draft more and stash kind of guy then? Like, do you think he comes over right away?
Okay. Right, but he has to. Because I don't think going to college will benefit him. Because in terms of, you know, experience and knowing how to play, he's too far behind. Going to college would cost him 4 years, and you're not sure if he's ever going to develop.
What about playing for an international team for a while and staying, you know, outside the U.S. for a bit? Do you think he comes over day one?
They don't have an incentive to play him because they want to win. And I think he is very far away in terms of his feel for the game, in terms of knowing how to play. But the athletic tools are just too crazy, man. I think he, if he knows what he's doing on the basketball court, he can be one of the best big men in his class, let alone last year combined. But you have to invest time. And if you, let's say you, the Wizards trade into the early second rounds, and he's there, I think he's the guy I would take, because he has the athletic tools that you cannot teach. You're buying physical tools for them and good developing teams. I think the Wizards are, with the personnel they're getting, they are focusing on development of players. That's the guy I would focus, man. And not to plug in my work, but I try to go as more in-depth as possible with him. But he's very raw, man. I think if you're looking for an NBA-ready guy, don't draft him. But if you have a couple of years to invest in him, you should 100% draft him. And, you know, let him develop. And if he doesn't bank on it, okay. Because you guys tried it with Yannick and Zosa. I don't even know where he's playing around.
He's playing in second league Spain, and he's playing about 4 minutes a game and averaging like 2 points a game and doing really nothing of any value. I was literally just going to bring him up as a point of comparison.
That's the other side of the medal, man. He can end up like him, or he can, you know, be a rotational piece. It's really, you know, swinging for the fences, man. High risk, high reward.
He looks more filled out and solid already and physically built than someone like Zosa was. He's still skinny like 3 years later. So Chamche looks big. He's like center size to me, not like some of these kind of small ball five-ish guys. Yeah, exactly.
I think the difference with Zosa is really elite athletic defensive tools, and he know what he was doing on that end on the floor.
Yep.
But you know, Chamche is really raw. He has, if you watch him play sometimes, he looks clueless at times. Another knock on him, but that's just, you know, how everyone's learning curve is different. And he's still 18 years old. I think he was one or two days away from being not eligible for this class. That shows how young he is, man. So he's still 18 when you draft him, I think until around Christmas.
For someone like Washington that has a G League team right down the street here where you could have him spend minutes on both teams, that might actually be a compelling fit. And they need some bigs for the G League roster here too. So you could take the time and just let him do his thing and not worry about him, you know, having to contribute for three or four years.
I would do that, you know, but again, at the right price.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, especially if he's there at 51, I have no issues with them. That's a no-brainer. You think he's definitely gone by then?
I think it's a tough question, man, because if you look at this draft, you have a lot of ready rotational pieces that winning teams want. If you look at the second round, especially in the United States, winning teams are drafted.
Yep.
So it's tough to determine if they go for upside. Why should they go for upside? They are already looking for NBA-ready players. Makes sense. I think he should be there. Okay. But would I pick him earlier? 100%. But again, I think it's being realistic. Mm-hmm. This year's weak class, you know, I get angry when people call it a weak class because it really isn't, because there are a lot of NBA-ready players in this class, but these are the players that these teams want, you know, so he should be there, but I would pick him earlier.
That's cool. That makes me feel better about him overall. Let's hit on like three-ish more guys and then we'll get out of here. This person's not really like a center to me necessarily, but I just kind of enjoy watching him play. Is Clemson's PJ Hall. How do you feel about Hall? And he's another guy to me that I think would be like better as a rotation piece on a playoff team. Like you just mentioned those kind of ready now contributor types. That's kind of how I feel about Hall.
Yeah, man. I like Hall a lot. I think I was high on Clemson this year as well in terms of the tournament because of him. Yeah. But he played behind Hunter Tyson last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helped him because he was the second guy. His three-point shooting number was way better than this year when he had to create more of his own offense as the number one guy. And this game was not built to be the number one guy. Mm-hmm. I think with him, you're getting, for example, the forward that a lot of teams need, you know, shooting heavy forwards, good athlete, strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he's white, he's getting underrated on the athletic side.
Yeah,
you know, all these white guys get, you know. So
he moves well. He runs the floor hard. Right. He shoots it. He's tough as shit. Like I'm in. Yeah.
On that end, he's really underrated because I think if you're looking for a team like, for example, New York at the four, he's the type of guy that would fit.
And then Tom Thibodeau would love to play him 40 minutes a game and run him into the ground.
Yeah, I think he can handle it, but I think he's more of that experienced. One specific role type of guy who should be in maybe first round considerations. If you're really confident, for example, I don't know about Porzingis' injury, but if Boston thinks, okay, man, we're going to look for a similar type of guy in the forward side, not that he's not Porzingis, of course, but he can fit in that type of mold. Stretch the floor, he should be the type of guy to focus. But again, he's a lot of competition. He's wanted. He's a wanted commodity, but compared to last year, he didn't really move the needle in terms of improving himself. So he kind of hurt his stock a little bit to come to this year. But I like him, man. I think he should be on an NBA floor, but I don't have high expectations in terms of, you know, ascending to a specific role.
Yeah, he's more a rotation kind of guy, I think, at best.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's okay, you know?
Yeah. I agree. Especially at this point in the draft here. So
this episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Another name that's kind of all over the place, I think people had him, you know, top 10 in some places coming into the year, is Azan Almansa, Spanish player. If you follow any international competition, he's like the MVP of every international competition for the last like 5 years at every level and age group. Just a crazy productive player. And he looks his best around like other smart basketball players that kind of move the ball and play a team-oriented game. So I was shocked that he went to the Ignite in the first place. And I think he was maybe the guy that, you know, it was to the most detrimental for their stock to go play for that team. Like, he needed other ball movers and he needed a real point guard, and he didn't have either of those, you know, sort of characteristics with his teammates at the Ignite. So to me, though, Almansa is like, just the ceiling is capped to a certain extent for me, because he's not a crazy athlete. He's not crazy big. He doesn't really shoot it. He's probably not a rim protector, but he's also not super switchable, but he's just good at doing stuff on a basketball court. I think the passing is pretty underrated, but can you be a good enough, you know, creator out of the post and things like that for people to kind of offset the things you're not great at? So he's the guy to me that needs like the perfect fit to really maximize here. But again, at 51, that'd be like a no-brainer pick for me if I'm the Wizards.
Well, to be honest, man, I want to go more in-depth about Almansa in terms of where he's misunderstood.
Okay.
Because last summer, I was talking to one scout who's working for the NBA team. He asked me about, what do you think for Almansa? I was like, I don't see an NBA prospect.
Sure.
But I love the idea of going, that he's going to the Ignite to be one. He was like, that's how we view him as well, because if you look at his game, he's built around, if you have a point guard, you should have him. Without a point guard, he's basically useless.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said he's pursued potential East of EuroLeague, you know, the highest tier basketball in Europe.
Yep.
In potential, because really tough to get there. Mm-hmm. But he's really that old school Roman. He's an excellent screener, old school pick and roll Roman with touch around the rim with the footwork. But that's where it all stops, you know. And when he went to the Ignite, I was like, I love that, because he has to show that he can play the American game.
Mm-hmm.
He was mocked top 10. And to be honest, that's where I made a mistake. At a certain point, I didn't trust my own work anymore. I went along with it for it.
Sure.
But I did. I was like, okay, what are these other people seeing him? Because I've watched these youth tournaments. It was all the same, because Spain plays for the same way for 10 years. These guys are playing in the same way for 10 years. Nobody beats them in their game. So, but to come to the point with Almansa, is the G League Ignite was a failed experiment for him. He lost his draft stock. But for the team, for example, like the Spurs, who have that pick and roll heavy game, that need to have a second unit with a play finisher inside the arc in a pick and roll heavy game. For example, Tyus Jones. Washington could do the same thing, but I don't see the value in that. That's his role, but it's not really an NBA type of game. So he's not really an NBA type of player, and that's okay. I think he tried it. If he would have stayed in Europe, I was 100% sure that he was going to get drafted, because being productive in Europe is impressive, yeah. But if you don't have any NBA traits, then he's useless. And he doesn't have any NBA trait despite of all the flashes of all the MVP awards in these youth tournaments, because the FIBA organized rules game with the big man is really specific, because in the NBA you have a 3-second rule and in Europe you don't have it. He can stay in the plane as much as he wants. And in NBA, he's going to get a couple of these calls and then he's out of the game, you know? So it's really how is the game is played that's really making him a good prospect or not. And to me, he's not really an NBA prospect. I think the experiment failed. He tried. I hope for him that he gets drafted and the team banks on his game in some degree of way. But it's not really a feasible long-term trajectory to grow into a long-term piece. I don't really see that game.
He's a guy I've kind of gone back and forth on from the, I hated the idea of him as a lottery pick when that was happening last year. I didn't get it at all. I kind of didn't even see him as a first round pick. Now I think it's kind of swung a little too far the other way. To me, I would draft him just based on, you know, like if you're the Wizards and you don't want three rookies coming in, he could be a draft and stash kind of guy for you and go be productive in Europe. And you see if the touch translates into shooting or any of these other things, but you really have to understand the kind of guy you're drafting and how best to use him, because he's very sort of team specific, unlike some of these guys, which is like very easy to plug and play them onto any team in the league.
Yeah, exactly. I think
you have to get him. And do you want to go through that kind of work for a second round pick? I don't know.
Yeah, you have to have a floor general in place to even play him.
He would look terrible to me in like, on the go-go as like, that kind of center. Cause it's the same kind of thing of like the fit is just not going to be good enough with like G League caliber point guards to actually let him do his thing. It'd be the same kind of stuff we saw this year, I think too.
Yeah, exactly. He's a utility player with a lot of needs. So that's why he's not really a good commodity for NBA teams.
Last guy I've got on the list here is San Francisco's Jonathan Mogbo. The Kenneth Faried comparisons, are still kind of prevalent out there as like this 6'7", run the floor really hard, dunk everything kind of guy. He's just fun to watch. I've said this a bunch on the show, so anyone who's a consistent Believe in Wizards listener knows, like, I'm up weird late hours, so the WCC is like perfect for me from a late night basketball time frame. So I see a lot of those kind of teams, and I watched a decent amount of Mogbo this year. If I'm a playoff team who just needs like an energy big at the end of the second round, like, he's a no-brainer to me also, even though, you know, he's probably not like us. There's no world where he turns into like a starting five in the NBA, and I don't think he's skilled enough to be like a full-time four. So you're really drafting like a utility small ball five to me, but that's kind of how I look at him. How do you see Mogbo's game?
To be honest, I think it's the contrary, because I want to go one step behind it to go to his JUCO years, because that guy really opened my eyes and that I have to focus more on JUCO basketball.
Okay.
Because what I see with him compared to other big men is rebounding, man. In terms of positioning and how he's boxing out, how he's grabbing his rebounds, it's crazy, man. I think that's really opened up in his game as a high-energy guy, as a play finisher. But I think it's, you know, it's not really acknowledging his game if you put in a specific role for him, because I don't think he has to be a shooter, but he plays like Klingon in a way. His activity as a screener, as an energy big man who keeps players busy in the, inside the arc, is opening up scoring opportunities. I think the WCC is not really a good comparison to how his NBA role should look like.
Sure.
But that's why I like his JUCO years, because he really grew from, you know, really the not to call it the trenches, but you know, from a lower level, he grew to the D1 level and really thrived on a specific role that, you know, got real NBA attention early in the year. I think if you look at him, it's again team specific, but he can grow multiple ways in terms of, for example, when the Knicks drafted Mitchell Robinson. I like that comparison for him. Mitchell Robinson is a crazy athlete who can do multiple things, but he didn't really, you know, invest too good in himself, and he had injury issues that really caused him some development. I think with Mokpo, he's older, but a team that's in need of rebounding at the five, for example, Oklahoma City, I think that's the best fit for Mokpo in terms of what they need as an energy five, in terms of high profile game.
Man, like, are you saying like as a starter next to Chet, like that kind of thing? You think he can be that level of player?
He can grow into that. I'm really confident that he can flirt with the first round selections that summer. And I know the first round is a selective group, and it's a close class in terms of 15 and 35 and even 45 can be, you know, 40 players in that pool who can, you know, battle for these spots. That is going top 20. I don't think he's going that high, but I think a team like Boston, for example, that missed Robert Williams due to injury, could use a guy like him. And in Oklahoma City, I think they would look at Robert Williams. I don't think I hope we had this guy, but he's not healthy. I think Mokpo can play in a similar way. I think back a couple of years ago, Williams and Mitchell Robinson were comparable players in terms of what they couldn't become. And Robert Williams made it happen. Mitchell Robinson didn't make it happen. But Mokpo should be more ready from day one to play in a similar role.
Okay, I dig it. Anyone else here that you got on the list of potential bigs that, you know, make some sense for teams picking late in the second round?
I think we had most of them, but I think normally there's not a lot of big men being drafted because, you know, the big man pool is more specific.
Sure.
I think these are the guys that should be 90% of the, you know, the people that are going to get drafted. But I think more than 10, it's not really realistic. I don't think we see a dozen of big men getting drafted in the top 40, for example. I think after that, well, I liked it because I think I'm still not 100% what the Wizards will do if they get to two. If Sarda is gone, you know, so maybe they will go for another position.
There are two other guys I would throw out here that I just like. I don't know what their NBA role is. I just enjoy them enough that if they were available for a two-way contract, either you take them at 51 if you're determined, or you try to get them undrafted, would be Oregon's Nafali Dante. He's currently appealing with the NCAA to get another year of eligibility. So we'll see, you know, if he can actually go back to Oregon for another year. That seems pretty unlikely. He's just like productive, and they were so much better when he was playing and healthy. And he's like a big 6'10" dude. Worst case scenario, he really locks it down for your G League team and could come in and play a couple, you know, spot minutes as like a big solid guy who defends the rim a little bit. Any thoughts on Dante?
I think he measured very well at the combine, right? But I didn't really watch his game last year, man. Zero.
He's just big. Big play finisher, you know, solid defensive, you know, prospect kind of thing. And not a huge ceiling. Another guy I'm just like, I can't give up on him is Nakon Tomlin. I was at Memphis this year. I think he entered the draft here. I need to check in on that. But if he's in the draft, the guy didn't start playing basketball till after high school. So he didn't play in high school, ended up playing in junior college, spent a year at Kansas State, transferred midway through the year here to Memphis, which ended up being kind of a mess as a team. But he's like a 4 or 5 with like some handles and guard skills. And that's a guy I would take a shot on, just, you know, given that he's got some upside left as a good athlete.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to discuss two ways, there's one name, Isaac Jones from Washington State.
I talked about him a little bit on another pod the other week. He's a guy I watch, and I don't think he's like good, and I don't see what he does. And then every time you look down, it's like, oh, he has 18-7 or 15-8. And he's just crazy productive.
Yeah, man. So he is a gift for being, you know, these teammate improvers.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really separating himself, but he's a teammate improver. You know, these type of guy that you want at the end of your bench. And he went from Portsmouth to the, you know, to the G League Elite Camp, and look at him now. I think if you're looking for a two-way guy who's going to get maybe guaranteed money, he should be one. But it's too many big men in this class, man, because I was really high after Portsmouth before that as well. But right now I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, it's easy to buy the hype, but how about feasibility for his long-term future? That's where I sat down, you know?
he's just like an energy guy, I think, and certain teams could probably value him more than others. All right. Mention the most important question here. Again, I talked about it at the beginning, but I want you to plug it a little bit. You got the Substack going. What kind of content can people expect to find there? And give us the pitch here for why they need to be locked in and subscribed. We got to grow that subscriber count for you.
I appreciate it, man. Because what I'm doing is every 2 or 3 days, I have one in-depth piece. I take about 10 clips, 10 different play types, and I go in-depth about their role. I only focus on the NBA role. So no dreamily stuff of if he develops X, Y, or Z, he can be a star. That's not my type of thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm focusing only on the less coveted players. So no reports on Sar. I don't care about being the 100th person writing about Sar, but I want to be the very few that writes about, for example, Isaac Jones or Jonathan Mokwo.
I love that.
And I am on 60 plus and only this class alone. Next year is going to be a lot more. I just keep on writing, keep on writing, keep on writing. And, you know, if you like to know about the less coveted players, you should definitely subscribe. If you're looking for the high, you know, the popular players, you shouldn't subscribe. So that's me being honest. But I really appreciate it, man, because I'm really trying to grow this thing. I'm getting a lot more traffic. I really see that a lot more people are interested in the less coveted players than I initially thought. So that's, you know, and then a delightful thing for me to see, not for myself, but for these players, man. Because I want to put some light on the players that don't get the shine and do deserve it.
I love that so much. And first of all, you got a great basketball mind, but I think just that on the human level is really cool too. It's like you said, like carving out the lane as the guy that's just talking about everyone in the lottery. It's like, okay, cool. But actually shining some light on some of these other unheralded or less heralded guys, I think is super cool. And if I were teams, that's the kind of content I would be paying attention to too. For them, it's about finding the guys on the margins. And yeah, you identify those guys as well as anybody out there. So, definitely subscribe, folks, if you're not already doing that. And great follow on Twitter here as well. So great stuff, man. Any names coming up that you got you're going to write about next that you want to throw out here?
I focused on the guys that I watched 0 minutes this year, man. Those are the most fun. I saw Cam Christie keeping his name in. That's one. I was flirting with David Jones. I saw some of him, but that's one. You know, just across the board, man. I think Carlton Carrington, Bob.
Yep.
Believe it or not, I watched 0 games of him, man. It was like, you see all the hype, etc. But right now, he's coming so popular. So for me, I don't see the value to write about him anymore.
Sure.
But more so in the guys, if you look at, for example, if you look at rookie scale, but auto eligibility entry, you see names that you never heard of. Those are the types that I'm focusing on. But the next one, I think, is going to be Cam Christie. I like that one. I didn't see anything of him, man. So watch some film. Focus on a specific role that I recognize, and then I just start, you know?
Those are the most fun to do, man. I have no feel for Christie's NBA future here, so I'm excited to see what you think, too, because it'll help me kind of make sense.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And me neither right now, so I'm going in blank. And those are the most fun to do.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for doing this again. We've been going back and forth for a while here. I was terrible about responding and scheduling this, so thank you for being so flexible.
Yeah, you're all good, man. I know you're a busy man. You know, I listen to the Believe In podcast every now and then. So
thanks, man. Yeah, we'll get one more of these in before the draft here too. I gotta hit some guards or something next.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Let's do it.
All right, everybody. You know the drill. Hit that little like button for us if you're watching on YouTube. If you're watching, listening anywhere else, make sure to subscribe and always leave a review. We appreciate that stuff. Check out Airson's work. And we're presented by betonline.ag, and we will check y'all next time.
Who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.